Now, for more on the debates, we've got Melissa Harris-Lacewell. She's a professor of politics and African-American studies at Princeton. And Robert Trainum, D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network, CN8. Hi, folks.
Hi.
So yesterday's debate focused on immigration, China, and Iran. Robert, did that format work for you?
It did work. You know, first, let's give kudos to NPR for actually doing a deep dive, if you will, on the three issues. And I agree with Michelle. I mean, the news gods were actually looking out for NPR yesterday because, as she mentioned, with Iran so dominant in the news, with Ahmadinejad saying he did not or does not have a nuclear weapon, and with the NIE saying or confirming that, it was obviously certainly appropriate to have to talk about that. With immigration, as you know, we've been having a long national dialogue as to whether or not we are going to accept illegal immigrants in this country, and if so, in what context. Same thing with China. Ironically, on the eve of the holiday shopping season, there are millions of parents out there that are worrying about toys from China. So again, just an absolutely perfect topic, and even more importantly, or topics, I should say, and even more importantly, it was even better that the candidates were able to do a deep dive into those topics.
Melissa, let's talk about one of those deep topics. Yesterday, the president discussed U.S. intelligence about Iran. And in a press conference, he said Iran halted its nuclear weapons proliferation in 2003, but the country still poses a threat to the U.S.
So I view this report as a warning signal that they had the program, they halted the program. And the reason why it's a warning signal is that they could restart it. And the thing that would make a restarted program effective and dangerous is the ability to enrich uranium, the knowledge of which could be passed on to a hidden program.
So that was the president. And at the debate, Hillary Clinton was the only candidate who thought Iran's Revolutionary Guard should be called a terrorist organization. That's been criticized by some other candidates. How do you feel that debate specifically is playing out among the candidates?
Well, this is going to be sort of a big difference between how this is going to play ultimately in the primary campaigns to get the Democratic nomination versus how it's going to play in the general election. And I think that Hillary Clinton is really positioning herself for thinking about the general election. In other words, she's going to have to appeal to a much more security-minded general population, a group of people who have some sense of agreement with President Bush's position that this is, in fact, a warning signal. I mean, it's a bit bizarre to suggest that 4 years ago a country halted its programming and to suggest that this constitutes for us, sort of a beacon of concern and anxiety around the possibility of terrorist threat. But we do know that terrorism and the language of international insecurity and fear is, for the past two election cycles, extremely powerful in getting voters out to the polls, especially voters in sort of middle American states.
Robert, and fairly briefly, how does this play out, the president and the candidates, on an international scale? Do we as a nation look as if we're potentially jumping the gun or stepping back from some of the things that were said previously?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. One, you have the leader of the free world, the president, saying one thing, but you also have the candidates out there, particularly the Democratic candidates besides Hillary Clinton, saying something completely different. If I'm the president of Iran, President Ahmadinejad, I'm saying this is exactly what I want. I want a fractured, divided politicians, if you will, saying two different very things because it just mixes the message up.
And at this point, do you see any of the international community, some of the people who were part of the coalition of the willing, weighing in on the U.S. and Iran?
I think so. I think you're going to have Britain and probably France weigh in some way, shape, or form. If I'm Russia, if I'm China, I'm probably going to take a step back and say, see, this is exactly why we need to have the UN engaged. This is the main reason why we need to trust the UN. Keep in mind, back in 2001 and 2002, the Bush administration pretty much pushed the UN aside and said they're not really relevant, and here are the reasons why. But I think we're going to go back to a more unilateral type of approach where our international community are going to say, with all due respect, United States, you really don't have a lot of credibility right now on the world stage. We need to engage the UN. We need to have a more unilateral approach.
All right, Robert and Melissa, we're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. We've been speaking with Robert Trainum, the D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network, CN8, and Melissa Harris-Lacewell, professor of politics and African-American studies at Princeton University. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. If you're just joining us, I've been speaking about politics with Melissa Harris-Lacewell. She's a professor of politics and African-American studies at Princeton, and Robert Trainum, D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network, CN8. Welcome back, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So let's pick up with Barack Obama. He is moving up in the Iowa polls, but could the timing of the caucus be off for him? January 3rd is part of winter break for many college campuses, and the senator gets momentum from the youth vote. He's trying to keep students who come from other states in Iowa, at least for the caucus. Now, the Des Moines Register columnist David Yepsen wrote that this could prove hard for Obama because many Iowa students are from Illinois. What do you think about that, Melissa, that there was a whole legal battle that allows students to vote in the state where they're attending school? Could this hurt Obama if people are just not available?
I mean, potentially. The main ways in which this sort of move forward to the winter holiday break really makes an impact on the primaries has more to do with kind of bodies and hands that have done the work of mobilizing. It has much less to do with the vote. Really, for a decade now, at every single election, the big story is it's going to be the youth vote. And the reality is it's never the youth vote. I mean, the one thing that Obama's campaign can sort of rest easy about is that really it's never the youth vote that that turns the tide. It is appropriate for him to continue to try to sort of mobilize this group, especially towards thinking towards the generals. But young people, as enthusiastic as they appear, tend to not make the difference in primary campaigns.
Robert, what about that whole door-to-door, no leagues of young, fleet-footed people going out and, you know, it's buttering folks up? Is that going to make a difference?
Yes and no. I agree with Melissa that at the end of the day, the youth vote does not turn the tide. However, in terms of actual votes. But the youth vote does provide a lot of free labor. They're very energetic, they're very idealistic, and they're extremely enthusiastic about whomever their candidate may be. In this instance, it perhaps could be Barack Obama. So what Senator Obama is looking for is actual foot soldiers, people that are going to knock on doors, that are going to drive people to the polls, that he's basically looking for foot soldiers that are going to bring people to the polls that ordinarily may not come out or that may be riding the fence. That's what may get Senator Obama to the finish line, is folks out there that are undecided, or that are saying, you know what, I'm not sure, but you know what, if you pick me up, if you give me a cup of coffee, if you give me a free ride, I might vote for your candidate.
Now, Robert, let's talk a little bit about Mitt Romney, a different demographic, talking about the Christian vote here. He is going to give a talk tomorrow about his Mormon faith. Will this be an outreach to evangelical Christians or a defense of his Mormon values?
You know, it's interesting. I talked to the Romney campaign early this morning about this, and they are very adamant that this is not going to be a, quote, the speech, if you will, which is very similar to what John F. Kennedy did in 1960 when he talked about how the Vatican was not, if elected, the Vatican was not going to control his ideological beliefs. The Romney campaign is telling me is that this is going to be about religion in general and about religion in the public square and about how there needs to be religious tolerance or more religious tolerance in this country as it relates to different people's beliefs. I'm told he's going to make a subtle jab, if you will, at folks out there that may say Mormonism is all about polygamy or whatever the case may be. He's also going to talk mainly about how we are founded on a country where religious beliefs and religious tolerance is the element of who we are as a people. And then he's going to move to the future. So it's going to be very interesting to see if, in fact, how that resonates with the American people, particularly with those voters out there in Iowa, in New Hampshire, in South Carolina, where, frankly, they may not know a lot about Mormonism.
Melissa, this is a country that has become increasingly pluralistic. You've got a lot more Muslims, people of various faiths. And yet within Christianity, there still are these distinctions which can cause deep divisions. Do you think that evangelical Christians, by and large, are going to feel mobilized in a field where no one of the leading candidates really fits their demographic?
I mean, this is part of what makes this particular election cycle so fascinating. You have a white woman and a black man leading with the Democrats, and a Mormon and a bad Catholic leading with the Republicans. This is, I mean, darn bizarre. But that's also what makes it, means that everything is kind of up for grabs. It's not clear exactly how these more traditional lines of identity are going to fall out when there's no sort of easy place to run. So given that you have a Mormon and a Catholic, where will evangelicals fall? I suspect that if Romney can do the work of suggesting that Mormonism is in fact Christianity, which I think is really the central anxiety for many evangelicals who see the book of later Revelation, of the Latter-day Saints, the Book of Revelations, that is the Book of Mormon, related to sort of the North American continent, as they see that as being outside of Christianity, outside of what is generally accepted as the holy books of the Christian tradition. I think that it cannot just be about religious tolerance. Romney is going to have to make a very clear and strong statement that Mormonism is Christianity, and that in fact the kind of worldviews and morals and ethics of Mormons are closer to that of evangelicals than the behavior of Rudy Giuliani.
Robert, very briefly, Americans seem to want someone who is religious, but some polls say it doesn't really matter what religion they are. Have we reached that point in American society?
Well, I think most Americans want a president of faith. They want someone that believes in God, that honors and respects God, and obviously that feels very comfortable in the church. What most Americans do not want is someone that's going to, quote-unquote, preach to them, or that it's going to tell them that their religion is better than the others. And we've done a very good job in this country of making sure that our presidents are, quote-unquote, in check. In other words, that they're faithful, they go to church services, whatever denomination that they may be, but so long as they don't preach to me, and so long as that they try to live the best that they possibly can live, most Americans are very acceptable to that.
Well, Robert, Melissa, great to have you on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Robert Tranum is the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast cable network CN8. He spoke with us from NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. And Melissa Harris-Lacewell is a professor of politics and African-American studies at Princeton University.